to the EGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 447, recorded on November 16th, 2016. And welcome to the 447th edition of the TD Game Podcast and the 280th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So last week was sort of experimental. It went well. It was not exactly the most organized thing in the world, but then again, it's not going to be without podcast notes. And for those who don't know, no, it wasn't because I was late or I didn't have time to do podcast notes. I just wanted to experiment. Okay, so what have you been playing, TJ?
I jumped on the Tyranny train.
You and Scott. Okay.
Yep. Aside from that, I got into a little bit of Call of Duty Infinite Warfare and played some. I finished the campaign. It was good. It was really good. It was actually my favorite campaign that they've had in that game, in those games for a while. But yeah, other than that, I've been spending most of my time figuring out how to bend the laws of evil.
You know, I have to wonder, have you played Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered?
I did. I'm not all that interested.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot of people who got really excited when Halo 2 multiplayer came back on the Xbox One, and a lot of their issues were with the multiplayer, you know. But me, I had no interest in a Halo 2 multiplayer. I was going to go for a Halo 5.
I think my problem with Call of Duty Modern Warfare Remastered is that you really have to be diehard dedicated to how things were at that time, because like the way things are now with Infinite Warfare and Black Ops 3, mobility has advanced so much further than it did with that game. You got the boost jumps, the double jumps, the slides, the all sorts of things that they didn't have with Modern Warfare Remastered. Modern Warfare Remastered is good, but it's almost like taking all of the advancements that have been made since then and just stripping it down to its core, which I know some people like, but it's not me.
Right. So, Scott, I assume you've also been playing Tyranny, and
I have played Tyranny, and of course some Civ and Minecraft as well when I get the time. I really do enjoy the Tyranny game. I actually spent time just doing part of the setup where you describe how you do the final conquest, because you get choices on which places you go to conquer, and I think those choices will have effect later on in the game, and I just haven't gotten that far to these places yet, but I am looking forward to seeing that, to going to like the Burning Library or I forget what a couple of the other places are called. When you ruin them, they get a specific name for them and they become this like taboo place.
Yeah, and I think that deserves some unpacking. So when Tyranny starts, the first thing that it gives you after you make your character is the game starts as the Overlord Kairos is about to march on the last free kingdom in the land. And he is he's having two of his main factions lead the charge. There's the Blood Chorus, who are disorganized, pretty much will take their goal is to, when they conquer somebody, anyone they don't kill, they recruit into their ranks. So they are literally a gathering of all their defeated enemies, just crushed and brought into the fold. And on the other end is the Disfavored, who were one of the last people that Kairos defeated, but they were like an organized, very, very trained, basically an entire army of veterans who don't take anyone on, are very, very like isolationist to their own values and honor and ideals. And so you've got this idea of lawful evil versus chaotic evil.
That's exactly how I view them.
And that's how you have to choose one of them at the beginning of the game to lead.
No, actually, as you go into the final part of this, you get four. You get basically four stages of this conquest, and different events. You can choose between two events per each one of the four legs. And in those events, you either choose to side with one or the other, or you choose to side with other factions that show up, like there's this Bronze Brotherhood, who are a group of mercenaries that come into play. There are a ton of factions in that game, and each choice that you make in the conquest affects how those factions come to see you.
And one of the things I heard that's disappointing is that while your companions are interesting, you never get the sort of character development you see in Mass Effect, in which you have to go on loyalty quests and figure out and find out more about them that way. Although they will react to your abilities, like the dwarf, who can never get out of his armor, will get scared of you if you're... I mean, your faction mates will start to either fear you or respect you, or both. Fear and respect you. I feel bad for the dwarf that's in an armor because, from what I hear, he talks about everything he can't do, including masturbate or go to the bathroom.
Yeah, there actually is a line he says where somebody asks him when he became practical, and he says, "When I learned I'd never be able to piss outside my armor again." And I think that the way they play with that is just, like, really funny.
Yeah, but pathetic, too.
One of the things I read about it was that they wanted to focus on the replayability of this game and going back on your choices. So some of the companion characters don't get quite as much development as it's spread out through these alternate routes that you can take.
I disagree. I think you get a lot of the companions. They react to everything you do with the other factions. Like that guy who's fused into his armor. He's a huge, huge, hugely honorable and loyal to the Disfavored. So if you F with the Disfavored, or if you join with the Blood Course, or if you do other things that are anything that could be bad for the Disfavored, he does not like, and he will tell you so. And that's how it goes with a lot of the companions. They each have a faction that they're tied to.
Yeah, but they're not as three-dimensional as, say, the companions you'll have in Dragon Age or the companions you'll have in Mass Effect.
I think you should play the game and judge for yourself, because, you know, I've been in games where people felt something was not good, and I liked it anyway, so, you know, it looks like TJ is liking the character interaction, and I haven't gotten that far into it myself, but I look forward to doing that, and I like, again, that you're not just some thug, you know, there's more interesting choices.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to wait until there's a Steam sale before I pick up Tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
So have you been playing anything else aside from Tyranny, Scott?
Yeah, Minecraft and Civ 6.
Oh, I meant to say TJ, but... I mean, you said Civ 6 and all that. I was actually... Now, here's the thing. You might as well assume I'm playing Civ 6 until we start the podcast. Because that's basically... You see, Civ 6 for me is like, oh, I'm on my computer. I really don't have anything to do. You know what? I'm going to play some Civ 6.
Sounds fine to me.
The other games I've been playing, I went through Mass Effect 2 yet again on the Xbox One, and now I'm in the middle of Mass Effect 3. And I am, you know, the Mass Effect series is like a cozy little glove that you just slip on when things are right. I mean, with all the expansions, it's basically a perfect RPG. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I'm feeling what people who played Final Fantasy, the first 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 of them, depending on who you ask, must have felt when they were playing Final Fantasy. You know, this can do no wrong.
Yeah.
And then when it gets long enough, then yeah, it does wrong. I mean, let me put it this way. Final Fantasy 13 is not a good introduction for me to the Final Fantasy series.
No.
I think anything Final Fantasy X and above is not a good introductory to Final Fantasy series.
You know, Paul will have an issue because he says he liked number 10 a lot.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people who did, like, but I think that, for me, that was the start towards the slope.
Yeah. Just curious, Scott, are you recording this?
Yes, I am.
Okay, just making sure. So I've been playing a lot of that. I've been playing a lot of Civ 6, and I've also been playing a lot of animation Throwdown, which, like I described before, is the cartoon character card game. And I spent $10 on some gems, because they have they always have a special deal going. But I really lucked out, because on my second purchase, would have been all the purchases I could make for those two with the gems I bought, I got Leela, and I was ecstatic about that. Because most of my deck is Futurama characters, and Leela is an epic character, and she was one of the characters available. And here's the thing: is that there's like 12 cards, and you don't know which one you're gonna get when you do it. I got one card, which was an event card I really didn't care about. I mean, it's still a powerful card, but it doesn't have an emotional attachment from me. But picking up Leela, oh yeah, I got Leela. Mm-hmm. So, Bender is a legendary card. What's going on in the background there? Anyways, so Bender is a legendary card. Professor Farnsworth is an uncommon card. Fry is a common card. However, I leveled him up several times, so he's as good as, at the very least, an uncommon card.
Nice.
Which is good, because there's some really nice combinations I can make with him, like the Devil's Hands, Mars University Fry, and Slurm Fry. And by the way, Drunk Fry, if he has an uncommon or better alcohol, he's almost unstoppable. So, anyways, Animation Throwdown, I recommend it for a free-to-play game, and you might actually end up, and I think I've ended up spending $20, which is okay. You know, I mean, that's sort of like, I know a lot of people who play free-to-play MMOs like Dungeons & Dragons Online and Lords of the Rings Online. They always say that usually you'll spend $20 if you like a game, and that'll be it. You know, if you're not a whale, you're just going to spend $20 because, hey, what I played has been worth $20.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So I don't think I'm going to make any more gem purchases, because I got some of the cards I really want, Leela. If I ever get Bender through some miracle, we'll see. There is a way to earn gems, but it's extremely difficult, so there's no chance of doing it that way. Anyway, this podcast is going to have one big, huge article about the Switch. And for those who have been under a rock, it's the Nintendo Switch. And here's the thing: it's coming out in March-ish. I'm not sure. Did they say definitively it's going to be in March?
Right now, it's set for March 2017.
Right. So. And we've heard virtually nothing about it since Nintendo decided to devote a few, a day for it. And there's been some rumors, not wild speculation rumors, but educational guesses. So our first item is, here are six of the biggest rumors we've heard, and this comes to us from Business Insider. Ever since the Nintendo unveiled its upcoming Switch console in October, the company's three-minute reveal video ultimately provided more questions than answers, so reporters have been diving deep into their wells of sources to dig up as much info as they can. What you'll find is a roundup of the most credible rumors about the Switch. Please note that absolutely none of this has been officially confirmed yet. So I'm going to read these out, and one by one, you can react and let us know what you think. First, it should be cheaper than the Wii U at launch. The Wii U launched with a $300 base model and a $350 deluxe edition that came with more storage memory back in 2012. That was way too much for a console that was heavily underpowered compared to the competition. Luckily, it sounds as if the Nintendo Switch will avoid the same mistake. Laura Kate Dale of Let's Play Video Games has been the most reliable reporter when it comes to the verifying Switch rumors. Her sources have Switch launching with a $250 base model and a $300 deluxe model that will come with more storage space and an included game. This would put the Switch right in line with the base models of the Xbox One and the PS4 in terms of price.
I hope that's true, because I think it needs to be a cheaper console in order to compete with the Microsoft and PlayStation. It has to have something to help it lure people to that console, because some people can only get one console. You know, not everybody is fortunate enough to be able to just buy all three. So that's a good price point, I think, hopefully.
Yeah, and I mean, I wonder, like, they've said that they weren't going to they've said that they weren't going to run the Switch technology at a loss, from what I remember.
I remember that, yeah.
So it's interesting to think of, like, we had been speculating that, is this using cell phone technology? Is this using, like, obviously it's using mobile technology.
Well, it's using a modified Tegra chip. So can we assume that modified means cheaper, like AMD compared to Intel?
Yeah. And I think it's interesting that for as much as cell phones cost, that this will be running at such a low price point.
Some cell phones are cheap.
Of course, Nintendo could be lying about not you know, doing it at cost. They could be going at a loss, you know, because, like I said, these things change a lot, so it'll be interesting to see. But a $300 console, you know, might be too much for me to have a second console, but I know a lot of people will jump at that price.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we just don't know enough yet to know if they're going to. I mean, we don't know how expensive the hardware is that they're using, and we just have to wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, the next rumor, it will allow you to use SD cards up to 128 gigabytes in size. This one also comes from Laura Kate Dale. There's not much to say here other than the easiest way to get more storage space on the console will be to buy SD cards. The biggest size it'll reportedly support is 128 gigabytes.
I'm glad that they're doing this, because I think the Sony PlayStation, you can't upgrade the hard drive, and there's no external storage.
Really? Because the entire thing about the PS3 was that you could get an external hard drive, not a hard drive, but external memory. External hard drive, actually, and just attach it to the PS3.
It's actually pretty easy to swap out hard drives on the PS4. I have a couple separate ones that I use for like, I have one that I store like my shooters on. I have one that I store my RPGs on. So it's not as hard as you would think, but it does take a screwdriver and a little bit of work.
So it's not like one of those things, if you you have to take off if you remove this tape, you void the warranty kind of thing.
No, actually, like Sony themselves offer instructions on how to swap out your hard drive. It's not that where you're going to void the warranty. It's actually much simpler than that. But I'm just saying that it's not like the Xbox 360 where you could just press that button and lift the hard drive off the top.
It's a little bit more.
It's just slightly more involved than that.
Okay. So 128 gigabytes isn't so bad. SD cards of that size are roughly, well, it depends on where you get it. I mean, you can get it for $60 in some places, $100 in other places for 128 gigabytes.
I will say this, that is awesome, because SD cards are super duper easy to work with.
Yeah, you just plug it in.
The only problem is accidentally dropping it somewhere and forgetting where it is.
Well, you know, they're going to require that if you're going to be able to download games onto this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, the packed-in game will be, in a bombshell report about the games available at Switch's launch, Dale said the more expensive version of the console will come bundled with a new version of Splatoon, the color-based classic shooter that debuted on the Wii U. The reveal video for the Nintendo Switch featured footage of people playing Splatoon on the new console with new in-game outfits and hairstyles. If this report is to be believed, that new version of the game will launch with Switch and be packed in with the deluxe bundle.
What is Splatoon? I don't think I've ever played that.
Really?
Splatoon?
That's the paint game. That's the game in which you're fighting people with paint.
Yeah.
I've never played this game.
Really?
It was the biggest game
on the Wii U.
No, it was
a Nintendo exclusive.
Dreamcast, like years and years ago.
No.
Nah, this was a Wii exclusive.
Yeah, this is... Okay. I mean, there may be other games which... actually, what I'm thinking about right now is Epic Mickey, which has sort of that mechanic, but...
I was thinking about this skateboarding game where you graffiti over the city.
Oh, no, that's... I know what you're thinking of. You're thinking of Jet Set Radio, or
yeah,
Jet Grind Radio. No, this is... it's a lot different. Jet Grind Radio is more of a mix of Tony Hawk and anime and science fiction. I still listen to the songs from Jet Grind Radio Future. I mean, I have Birthday Cake by Sibamato in my brain, and I have Like This, Like That in my brain,
And I have understand the concept of love. And also
that's easily my favorite song from that whole soundtrack.
Yeah. I liked Birthday Cake best. It was done, by the way, that song was obviously helped with by Yoko Ono because it has that dissonant thing. But you know what? It works in that song. It really works. Mm-hmm. Next rumor. A new Mario game in the same vein as Super Mario 64 will also launch for the Switch. That same report has more details about the still-unnamed 3D Super Mario game that is briefly seen in the Switch reveal video. More importantly, it will apparently launch alongside Switch. The game will follow in the footsteps of the Super Mario 64 and Super Mario Galaxy, giving players a central hub area to explore that contains several separate levels to choose from. Those levels have multiple objectives to complete, rather than being purely linear. It will also have some sort of co-op multiplayer component, with players being able to work together to complete objectives. Hmm. So, co-op Mario 64, basically.
That is both the best and worst part of new Super Mario Brothers World. The more people you have, the harder it is to do anything in that game.
That's probably why it's good to just keep it to two or three people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, did the original Wii no, it had Luigi's Mansion or something? Something with Luigi.
Luigi's Mansion was the GameCube.
Mario Sunshine?
That was N64, I thought.
Because the
that
Wii...
That might have been GameCube as well.
The Wii launched with a Mario game, but it wasn't the Mario game people wanted.
It thought that was Super Mario Galaxy.
Oh, really? Launched with Galaxy?
Super Mario Galaxy launched on the Wii.
I know it launched on the Wii, but was it on a Wii launch?
I don't recall any other Mario game on the Wii.
So the next thing is Skyrim will also be a launch game. The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim just got an upgraded re-release on the PS4 and the Xbox One, which I will say that TJ and Scott scoff at, which Dale's report says will launch alongside the Nintendo Switch. This comes as no surprise that the game was prominently featured in the Switch reveal video, even though the game's developer hasn't confirmed it's coming to Switch. The only interesting tidbit here is that this version of the game will apparently have mod support like the PS4 and Xbox One versions. That means you'll be able to install user-created modifications for the game, which would be quite a departure from the closed-off nature of Nintendo's previously online units services, but you have to wonder if they're going to have the same policy as Sony, in which, you can have mods, but it must use in-game assets.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope it's more like the Xbox. I hope it's more like the Xbox version and less like the Sony version.
And I'm going to tell you one thing. If they try to do this portable, I'm willing to bet you that battery's going to zonk out in like 30 minutes to an hour.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's going to be like, oh, yay, now I can play Skyrim on Nintendo. Everybody that wants Skyrim already has it. Or they're going to get it for $5 on Steam. They're not going to get it for, I don't even know, it'll probably be $60 or something. And it's like, nah, I'll just get it for $5 on Steam.
You know, they should just make it a pack-in game. Instead of Splatoon, I'm willing to bet you people will be more likely to buy Splatoon than they will Skyrim.
Yeah, when you see a game that's already on PS4, or Xbox One, or PC, and then they release it on a Nintendo system, it really does feel like the old days when you would see games that were also on those systems and then released on the Game Boy.
Yeah, like Mass Effect 3. who was gonna buy Mass Effect 3 on the Wii? Seriously. The only bad news is the new Zelda game will probably not be ready for launch. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild has been something of a poster child for Nintendo Switch in the console's marketing, and it's super impressive to be able to take such a massive game on the go. Unfortunately, you probably won't be able to get it on day one. Several sources are reporting that the game will miss the console's launch date. Popular Nintendo tipster Emily Rogers says that the game's testing process is going to take so long that it'll instead launch later in 2017, probably during the summer. This would be a huge blow This would be a huge blow if not for a major new Super Mario game coming out alongside the console. Will be fine. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is... I'm going to ignore that. This would be a huge blow, if not for the major new Super Mario Brothers game... Oh, I did that wrong. This would be a huge blow if not for the major new Super Mario game coming alongside the console. The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild is still planned to come out on the Wii U as well. You know, the interesting thing about this is that Forbes magazine released an article saying that they should just delay the launch of the Switch until Zelda was ready.
Yeah, whether or not they do that, I don't mind. Make the game good.
Yeah, I do appreciate when they take the time to make a good product and not rush things. So if they feel that they need more time, this is a good move. It's still a little disappointing though. But yeah, I understand.
I will say this though, releasing a game like Zelda in the summer. And the summer is not exactly a game in which you find a lot of blockbuster games. So we could actually have the summer all to itself.
Which would be great for it.
I mean, you know, it seems like the summer has been relegated to indie games on Steam these days.
Yeah, but like, I mean, if you think about it in that light, it's actually pretty genius. Because then, like, you don't have a situation like Titanfall 2 finds itself in. Where it's sitting right smack dab between Battlefield 1 and Call of Duty Infinite Warfare and can't get sales because everybody's looking at all the other at the more established franchises.
You know what that makes me wonder is if they're going to have mods for Skyrim on Switch, or there's going to be mods for Zelda on Switch. I severely doubt it, but could you imagine if they had mods for it?
That would be nice.
Yeah.
Doubtful.
The more I think about it, though, the more I think that it would be totally regulated like Sony, because Nintendo hates the idea of something that they can't completely control on their system.
Yeah, just look at the Mario Maker and how they treated everybody making custom maps. I don't have high hopes for all this modding for Nintendo. I don't think they understand the creativity and potential. And for, you know, the modding community, I just don't have high hopes at all.
Yeah, well, the thing is that there's like half a dozen people who are really good at it, and everybody else who just makes the same level over and over and over again.
Yeah, that's true,
you know,
too.
But you have to look out for those half dozen people who know what they're doing.
And that's true on Little Big Planet. There's like a handful of really good maps, and then there's the same... roller coaster, city destruction, and just same kind of levels just spammed everywhere.
Mm-hmm. That, and do you guys remember how much of a debacle it was to try to stream Mario Maker on YouTube when the game first came out? And Nintendo was striking so many accounts with takedowns, and it's like their own game. It's their own game that they were advertising so much for community content, and they're like, nope, you can't put our game in your videos.
That's a way to strangle a game in the crib.
Again, Nintendo does not understand how the internet works.
Let me put it this way. The Randy the Macho Man Savage mod for Skyrim, I mean, not for Skyrim, for Fallout 4, is, okay. But the video just sold that thing, and it's like everybody wanted it just because they saw the video.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't take much effort. Just a new skin and sampled digital sounds. Boom, you got it.
There are so many mods in there. Somebody even made a Donald Trump mod for Fallout 4. I mean, it's just there's so many things that people can do, and it's just it's sad that I think Nintendo will limit it. Probably limit it to just their in-game content.
You know what really disappoints me? And you know what game really needs to be popular again? And that's Commander Keen. Because for those of you who don't know, Commander Keen was actually originally going to be Super Mario Brothers on PC.
Mm-hmm.
And they made it as a demo. And Nintendo said, thanks but no thanks. And they said, you know, we did all this work. Let's just reskin it. And call Commander Keen. And it would be great to have Commander Keen back again. You know, a nice 2D platformer in the style of Super Mario Brothers, but with Commander Keen and invite modding.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know what the heck I'm talking about, just Google it.
That would be under id right now, which would be under Bethesda, so I guess Bethesda would be the ones making a call to that.
I know, I'm just saying. Just saying. Next, a couple of other major Wii U games are coming to Switch. Since plenty of people missed out on the Wii U, it makes sense to give some of its best games a second chance on of life. Since plenty of people missed out on the Wii U, it makes sense that it gives some of its best games a second chance at life on the Switch. Sounds like Nintendo will do just that. Though, you know, it really doesn't take Nintendo much to recycle its games on different platforms. Seriously.
They seem to have a much easier time doing it than Sony does, anyways.
Yeah, Dale's sources tell her that 2014 Super Smash Bros. Game for the Wii U will get a re-release on Switch. Oh, big surprise, there's going to be a Super Smash Bros. On a Nintendo console.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Nintendo Kart game that was briefly showcased when the Switch was revealed is apparently an enhanced version of Mario Kart 8 for Wii U. Yeah, big surprise, there's going to be a Mario Kart game on the Switch, too. So, Mario Kart and Super Smash Brothers. Who's shocked that these games are going to be on the Switch?
No one.
What I would like to see, though, imagine if you could transfer content from your Super Smash Brothers version on the 3DS to your Switch, which would include the amiibo characters.
All I got to say is what? No Mario Party?
I'm pretty sure there's Mario Party coming at some point, but it's not. May not be a. It may not be a launch title. See.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking of getting an amiibo to play with my Animal Crossing on 3DS.
Oh yeah, do you think there's going to be an Animal Crossing on Switch? Yeah, I think so. The question is if there's going to be a Pikmin game, if there's going to be a Kid Icarus game, if there's going to be some of the other Nintendo properties that are not the properties, but are still major properties. I mean, what about Metroid Prime? I mean, they screwed that IP up left and right.
There'll be another Metroid. They won't abandon Metroid.
They haven't. But the thing is that what was the last game? It was a 3DS game, and Samus wasn't even the main character. And that entire 3DS game was intended for multiplayer, which is silly because how many people actually play multiplayer on their 3DS?
Yeah,
actually, I do with my wife and daughter. We play Animal Crossing multiplayer.
Okay, but I'm just saying that's not what the console is really built for. You know, people don't buy a 3DS to play multiplayer. Yeah, and the kind of multiplayer that they're talking about. And, you know, with Animal Crossing, that's more of a social multiplayer, right? The Metroid game for the 3DS was not social multiplayer. That was actual multiplayer, you know? And it was built to be multiplayer, which is why the single player sucked. And not to mention, they keep on talking about Samus in the game and don't have her in it. Why not just leave Samus in the game? Anyways. One of EA's quote-unquote bigger games will come out on Switch. This is the tiniest sliver of information possible, but EA, one of the biggest video game companies around, will release one of its quote-unquote bigger games on Switch, according to CFO Blake Jorgensen. What does that mean? We have no idea yet. EA is responsible for all sorts of massive games, from Madden to Battlefield. People are their gut feeling, it'll be FIFA 17, which is one of the most popular video games in the world. But you could also think it might be Mass Effect Andromeda, which is getting a reboot and does not require previous saves to run. And the other thing is that, coincidentally, Mass Effect Andromeda is going to be coming out the same time as the Switch is being launched.
Hmm. Yeah, that might not be bad speculation to expect that. Well, I mean, we've seen Mass Effect on the Nintendo systems in the past. There's no saying that they won't try again.
Yeah, and I really doubt it's going to be a sports game, because EA basically said, we're done with the Nintendo console in terms of sports games. I mean, they even did shitty ports of their previous Nintendo games with Tiger Woods. You can look at that scandal from, like, 2 or 3 years ago. Not that it was exclusive to the Nintendo, because they did it to the same thing to the PC version, too.
Maybe it'll be one of the Star Wars games, then.
Times are changing a bit, because the fact was that Nintendo lost EA's support when they started doing their own. I forget which franchise they went with, but they went with their own sports franchise.
Oh, you mean the crappy what's called motion games that what is it? Wii Bowling and Wii Tennis.
No,
and
it was something else. I forget exactly what the franchise was, but it basically stepped on EA's toes. And they pulled all support.
Their football game, maybe? I don't know.
So the fact that Nintendo is cooperating with EA even tentatively now, opens the possibility because they weren't talking at all for a while.
You know what? That sort of reminds me of something that's completely off topic. Do you remember when Rockstar released their table tennis game? And it was like, what? Wait, what? That's, you know what? I would really like to see a good tennis game, not on Wii, not on Nintendo console. I mean on the other consoles, even PC. And I don't mean Sonic Tennis either, which was on the 360. I just mean a real tennis game.
The last time that there was a proper, meaningful tennis game on any system was, I think, Virtua Tennis 3.
Yeah. Yeah, and it actually had actual stars in the game, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think that's when Serena and Venus Williams were still at the height of their powers.
Yeah. Anyways, final thoughts on the rumors as a whole before we move on to the next item?
I hope they build some new IPs, bring back some old ones. They really need to, I feel like, recapture that magic that they used to have, because it's like, it's really sad when I look back on Nintendo and I saw like a picture of, I think they were doing Sega versus Nintendo, and they showed like a montage or a collage, sorry, of all the Nintendo characters. And I looked at them, and like, there was a lot of them I didn't recognize, and some of them were your typical Mario, Metroid, and all that. And I just kept thinking about the ones that I really enjoyed, like Final Fantasy, Dragon Quest, and those weren't actually Nintendo's IPs, and they were all third party. And I think that has really been the biggest mistake Nintendo has done, is drive away third party game makers. They need to bring them back.
Well, here's the thing. There was a time in which Nintendo didn't care about third-party software because they were the only game in town, and if you didn't have the Nintendo seal of quality on your game, aka licensing fees, then, you know, tough luck. Now they're not used to third-party developers having the power, which Microsoft and Sony now fully acknowledge. It took Sony a little bit to realize that Microsoft getting exclusives on content, on getting content first, was a huge deal to gamers, you know?
I mean, I'm looking into getting Dragon Quest Builders, because that's like Zelda and Minecraft made a baby. And that's that phrase, Dragon Quest, used to belong to Nintendo. I mean, I would mentally connect those two all the time, but it's on Sony, you know, so I have very little motivation to even get the Switch. There's,
you know,
very few games.
That reminds me, for those of you out there, go to YouTube and look up Zero Punctuation Capcom 5. Find out about the Capcom 5 when Nintendo first started getting screwed over by third-party developers. That was when, hell, guess what? Resident Evil 4 is going to be a GameCube exclusive. Oh, no, wait, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
There's going to be 5 games that are going to be exclusives, and the only one that was an exclusive, Piano 5, was absolute crap. And one of them was never released.
Yeah.
So, and the funny thing is that they announced they released the PS2 version before they released the GameCube version, which is a slap in the face. Or they announced it 2 months. Anyways, but yeah, look up Zero Punctuation Capcom 5. It's hilarious. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Okay. Pull up here. Oh my god, this rumors one is so long. Anyways, EA pursuing development of an open-world game, from Game Informer. Electronic Arts is looking to add another genre to its stable of games. While the company is largely known for sports games, shooters, and the BioWare catalog, recent comments from CFO Blake Jorgensen indicate that the company may soon join the crowded open-world action genre dominated by games like Grand Theft Auto and Assassin's Creed.
You were about to say Ass's Creed. I could just hear that.
Yeah, well,
That's the porno version.
If this sounds exciting, don't hold your breath just yet. Jorgensen says the game will be a unique opportunity to start building a new franchise in action. though also cautioned that we won't see it for at least another 3 years. Montreal-based Motive Studios, headed by original Assassin's Creed Montreal-based Motive Studios, headed by original Assassin's Creed producer Jade Raymond, may be the studio creating this production. Raymond previously mentioned that her studio is making a new IP. EA has made slight forays into the open-world genre in the past with Dragon Age and Mass Effect, though those games weren't as seamless as other sandbox titles. The experience from the smaller open-world sections made with the Frostbite engine, the engine EA is encouraging most of its studios to adopt, may help speed the development of this game.
I wish it would stop just slapping on the Frostbite engine to everything they see. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work well with other games, you know? Yeah. But, so yeah, I mean, Jade Raymond, what's it called? She knows what she's doing. Let's just say that. So, here's the thing, though. Assassin's Creed, the first Assassin's Creed, was deeply flawed, but then it developed into Assassin's Creed 2, which everybody loved.
Yeah.
So,
it's not giving us a lot of details on what kind of open world game, because that can mean a lot of things. Is it sci-fi? Is it fantasy? Is it a zombie game? Is it, you know, what is it? There's a whole lot of nothing there.
I would love to see a full out-and-out science fiction game. Not a near-future game like Watch Dogs. I mean an out-and-out science fiction game. Sort of like Mass Effect, open world. Obviously not Mass Effect, but you know what I'm talking about. In which you have aliens and lasers and ships and all that stuff. It would work perfectly in it. And you could have some really imagine having a gigantic kaiju that you have to deal with in an open world game.
Yeah.
And a third person shooter, much like Mass Effect 2, not like Dragon Age, because fighting dragons was dull.
Well, I don't know about kaiju, but I too am waiting on CD Projekt Red to announce their game.
Oh, well, okay, so Cyberpunk 2077, that's a thing that's actually coming out in 2017, and everybody forgot. You know, and I'm really looking forward to that. I didn't get into The Witcher on the ground floor, but I'm planning to get in the ground floor with Cyberpunk, which, by the way, was by Talsorian Studios, which is a creation of Mike Pondsmith and the first true black nerd. Look him up, people. He was a genius. What?
Is that the YouTuber?
No, Mike Pondsmith? No, he's been around forever. He did Cyberpunk. Oh shoot! And one of the biggest. You know, I have to look him up because El Talsorian is a major thing. He did Mechton. He also did the Forgotten Realms and Oriental Adventure modules for Dungeons & Dragons. He did a lot. He's one of the biggest influences on tabletop role playing. So, anyways, but Cyberpunk, I think, is his biggest thing. And he was before Shadowrun. He was before all those. He was in the ground floor. And I don't know if it's still a popular tabletop game, but it is being made into a video game. And Cyberpunk 2077, you got to check it out.
Yeah. It's easily going to be my most anticipated game of 2017. I have no idea what's coming in 2017, but right now that's sitting well at the top of my list. If it even has a touch of the depth that Witcher 3 had, it'll be good.
Well, here's the thing. They've already been talking about how the size of Cyberpunk 2077 is going to dwarf The Witcher 3.
That's ridiculously awesome.
Yeah.
Because, but yeah, for EA, I agree with Scott. I mean, there's a huge difference between playing The Witcher 3 and playing Red Dead Redemption. They're both open world games, but they're very, 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 very different games.
You know, someone made a clickbait article saying that, wondering if they were going to include Red Dead Redemption Remastered with Red Dead Redemption 2. I wouldn't be surprised, but I doubt it.
It'll probably be something where they do it right before, like probably in the couple months before Red Dead Redemption 2 is set to be released.
They might even not bother doing it. I mean, they may have just put all their energy into Red Dead Redemption 2 and know that, hey, you know what? People loved Red Dead Redemption. It has such great word of mouth. We don't need to release a remastered. I mean, maybe we'll do it sometime down the line when we do our classic hits thing, you know, our classic hits compilation, you know. And it's like, oh, guess what? It's going to be on the PlayStation system in 2020.
Yeah, and I mean, it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for them. Rockstar is no stranger to doing compilations like that. They've done at least two or three with the Grand Theft Auto series.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the remastered version of State of Emergency. Damn it. I wonder how many people remember that turd. So, anyways. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've had it with open world games per se. I mean, the open world games a la Fallout 4, a la Elder Scrolls. You know, I don't mind if it's a third-person actioner like Mass Effect is, even though it's not really an open world game. Not even Andromeda is going to be. There's a lot of new information about, by the way, Andromeda. They just introduced a new antagonist species called the Ket, which are basically rock monsters whose armor is almost attached to them.
Hmm.
So they're trying to make them really alien. Because in Mass Effect, all the aliens have a smooth, sharp cleanness to them, you know?
They had a rock race in Dragon Age, the first Dragon Age game. I remember that.
Golems. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, there wasn't... No, yeah, golems. Yeah. But I'm talking about... go ahead.
One of them joins your party in one of the DLCs.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Shale. Mm-hmm. I love Shale. What's it called? Bidgin' crap. If you happen to see a small, squishy human dwarf, that might be me. Female dwarf. And, you know, it hints around that she actually does get cured and becomes a female dwarf again.
Yay.
Yeah, everybody loves Shale. Shale and Sten got along really well.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the most rewarding moments of the game is that when she says that she doesn't call you it, she calls you you. You know, and she says, it has been, you have been kind to me. It's such a warm moment. Yeah. So, unfortunately, that was Dragon Age Origins. And Dragon Age 2 I liked. I mean, I had to play it twice in order for me to like the characters, but Dragon Age 3 just didn't do it for me. Or Dragon Age Inquisition. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
All right. Dead Rising 4 removes campaign co-op. This is from Game Informer. Today, Capcom revealed that Dead Rising 4 won't feature campaign co-op, but will have a separate mode for four-player co-op, according to a Twitch stream Capcom did with user ExpertZone Community yesterday. Gameplay producer David McGarren said that they arrived at this decision to focus on telling Frank's story and that they are excited to bring him back. The separate four-player co-op mode is based off the series' old Infinity mode. All four players have to survive in a mall for as long as possible as they take on crazy missions. Players start and arm themselves in a safe house at the beginning and must make it back to a safe house at the end of the day. It's unclear whether or not it has to be the same safe house and if health will continually deplete like the old Infinity mode. This is the second Dead Rising game to not have campaign cooperative play since Dead Rising 2. Off the record, Case Zero, Case West, and Dead Rising 3 all had story mode co-op.
So in other words, only the first Dead Rising didn't have it.
Yeah.
And then Dead Rising 4 comes out on Xbox One, PC, December 6th, and will also have Season Pass. And I guess that sounds disappointing for those who like to do co-op story mode with Dead Rising, because, I mean, that kind of thing would be fun. I like the idea of doing a story with my friends, and we're playing through that story, and we can react and everything. Because especially if my friends are in a long distance in other places. Like, you know, me and TJ are going to play Wasteland 3, and it would suck if we couldn't do the story mode, you know?
Yeah.
It'd be like, what's the point? We can't react and go, oh, that's cool, that mission, whatever. And so, you know, that's really disappointing.
You know, how much you want to bet that there will be a co-op, same campaign co-op, but it's going to be paid DLC and part of the season pass?
Yeah. All I know
is that... Yeah, I saw that season pass, yeah.
All I know is that Capcom really sucks at multitasking. The main campaign will probably be good.
But the problem is, it's not the same Frank, dammit. It's not our big fat Frank. I like big fat Frank. What the hell's wrong with Big Fat
Frank?
No, he's like the new DC Amanda Waller. Boring and slim and heroic. I don't want heroic Frank. I want a Frank that whines and complains and eats things and is fat. And when you see him coming up in the Case West, when you have him coming up in the wrestling ring, he's a big fat guy in spandex. It's glorious. And he's been in wars, you know.
Oh God, the puns too. The puns were so cringeworthy.
And you know they're not going to have the same voice actor. I mean. This is what happens when you screw with you know, I mean, would anybody care about Marcus Fenix if he wasn't voiced by John DiMaggio? There's only one Marcus Fenix against John DiMaggio.
I think that the Dead Rising 4 campaign will be good, but I really have my doubts about Capcom tells you, oh, we'll give you this other mode, so don't worry about it. That usually means it's going to be a stripped down version of whatever you were hoping for. Capcom sure does love their boss rush modes.
And you know what? You're going to have cross platform play between Xbox One and PC too. Remember, I think Dead Rising 4 is going to be Xbox Anywhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that would be really nice, you know, to be able to play on PC and my friends are on Xbox One, or if I just go from my Xbox One to my PC, or I want to watch this show on my TV, so I'm going to move it over to my PC, you know, that sort of thing. That would be cool, you know, but if you're not going to have campaign co-op, then I don't know if I really care about Dead Rising 4.
Yeah. I mean, that was some of my favorite parts of Dead Rising 2, was me and my buddy, like, he would be dressed as normal Chuck, and I would be dressed as Chuck in Daisy Dukes, cowboy boots, and a white bra.
Well, you didn't wear a surf bot? You didn't wear the surf bot head?
Nah, I just went. I had some like mom. I had some like '90s mom sunglasses on, and we would roll the dice on which Chuck would be coming in to visit with the daughter and tell her it would be okay.
Yeah, Frank in a tutu, you can't fail. I don't know.
Yeah, if it's not going to be campaign co-op, I don't know that I care.
See, the thing is that, you know, I keep on getting burned by Dead Rising. I bought Dead Rising 1. Oh, it's great. Oh, the save system sucks. Oh, Dead Rising 2 is fun. Save system. Dead Rising 3. You know, it's sort of like I keep on wanting something from them, and they keep on screwing up in some way to sour me on Dead Rising, you know? And I really want to like it. Especially now, they have a ridiculous number of zombies you can have on one screen over, you know, now in 5 digits on one screen. With no dip in frame rate.
I mean, how hard would it be to say you always have a radio in those games, so just contact the guy that you're that you have on the other end of the radio and say, here's what I've done, and that's the save system.
You know, there should have been, in the first game, there should have been a mission to kill Otis. Just to kill him. Yeah, you want to see this is rude. Bam! Just shoot him in the... See, that was rude. That, what I just did, is rude. Not you interrupting me while there's 50 zombies attacking me, and I have to get off the radio to prevent myself from becoming a zombie souffle, you know? So, I'm checking out some of the stuff, and just so you know, TJ, there is a new teaser for the skyscraper map for Rainbow Six Siege.
I'm looking forward to it.
Operation Red Crow.
Yeah.
The trailer's right, is out right now. What?
It's looking good.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing is that we hate to get back to this subject, people. We've talked about it like last year, I think. But Rainbow Six Siege is interesting to me because it stumbled out of the gate badly. You know, it was terrible from what I understand. And now, you know, Ubisoft kept on saying, you know what, we're going to listen to you, and we're going to continue to improve and continue to improve and continue to improve. And now we have guys like TJ who are looking forward to the next DLC.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I was on from Jump Street.
Okay, but I'm just saying other people, though.
I had pre-ordered that game, and I was ready to... I knew what I was looking at when I saw it. It was looking pretty great, and I'm glad to see that it has only evolved from its... it did have a rough start, but it's only gotten better and better. Those guys are some... I think it would be a toss up between Blizzard's Overwatch community and Ubisoft's Rainbow Six community as to who better listens to their fans.
Yeah. Now, to cap this off, did either of you see the Jimquisition the other day? I think it was yesterday, about the developer Five Nights at Freddy's?
No. What happened?
So he was talking about how the developer, who was a single developer, knew how to take criticism. He talked about how other people, when they make a terrible game, they just go off and they sue everybody in sight and they vanish into obscurity. The previous game that the developer had was this bear game, this teddy bear game, which is basically a kid's game to teach math. And everybody talked about how creepy it was and how it was super uncanny valley creepiness. Mm-hmm. And it got bad reviews. And what he did was, instead of whining and attacking people who gave it bad reviews, he listened to reviews and said, oh, really? So you think they're creepy, huh? You think these bears look creepy and uncanny valley? Well, guess what? I'm going to make a game in which that's all what it's about.
Yeah.
And he made Five Nights at Freddy's, and while it isn't a great game, I didn't like the game. I mean, it's just a jump scare game, but it's a really successful game. It does what it does well. And he made billions of money because he took the criticism and made something positive out of it. You know,
it's more of a Simon Says kind of game where you have to do these patterns to keep the jump scare from happening. The jump scare is the fail state.
I know, I get it, but I'm just saying it became a popular game, but it became an entire zeitgeist unto itself, you know?
Yeah.
It became a thing. And
the videos where they would just have these overreactions to the jump scare.
Yeah, the reaction videos, yeah. So, and even when his spin-off Five Nights at Freddy's World was a complete and utter disaster, what did he do? Well, he told everybody, I was wrong, you're right. He refunded everybody, no matter how long they played it. He fixed it up, and then he re-released it for free.
Yeah. That guy is incredibly humble about what he does. And, I mean, it's amazing, too, because he does all of it. He does the music, he does the art, and he does the mechanics. And that is a lot of work for one dude to do. And, like, there was a point where he was releasing one game a year, and I'm like, wow. And I know that it's a lot of like the same. There's certain mechanics that are recycled, but on another note, like, it's very, very different the way you handle Five Nights at Freddy's 1 and 2. Like, there's certain things that go on that there you just couldn't. You can't just copy and paste the code and say, well, this will work.
But I'm just saying. This is an example of when you get criticized and people don't like your game and it gets universal bad reviews, the thing isn't to moan and bitch about it and blame everybody but yourself. You know, it's basically what did I do wrong? How do I improve it? And how to take the strengths of my game and make something new that people are going to like, you know? You can't spend energy attacking other people for criticizing your game. No matter how misguided you think they are, you know, you roll with it and you go with it, and then you decide, you know what, I'm going to take what, you know, I'm going to listen to what people didn't like, what people did like, and I'm going to make a new game about it, you know. I'll give you another example of that, and that's the Assassin's Creed. The first Assassin's Creed, a lot of people did not like that game, believe it or not. They did not like the repetitiveness, you know. What they did like was the assassinations, and what Ubisoft Montreal did was took all of the criticisms and turned it into Assassin's Creed 2, which is probably the best game in the series alongside, was it Revelations that was the one that was after it?
Yeah. Yeah, they, or no, wait, okay, so the Ezio Saga was Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood.
Right, Brotherhood, and half of Revelations. So, yeah, the only thing I don't like about that series is what they did with Desmond. What a waste of a character just to off him like that.
Yeah.
And Lucy, too, just for shock value. Anyways, but I'm just saying it's a lesson to be learned there. You know, if people dump on your game, don't attack them. Just figure out why they're dumping on it and just take what your strengths are and use that for your next game, you know? Yeah, people gave it a negative review, but you know what? Just move on and make something better.
Are we not saying the studio that Sterling hates because we're afraid they'll sue us? Oh, God, what a debacle.
Yeah. So, I'm going to find out the name of the Jimquisition. And the thing about Jim Sterling is that character that he plays, he only does it because when he tried to be normal, people attacked him for it. And they liked it when he acted like a pompous twit. So, and it's the name of the video is A Lesson in Five Nights. So he decided to go overboard with it, you know, with the Pink Floyd, the Wall imagery. You know, he decided to go over with it because he's very. I've met him several times, you know, at E3, and he's very quiet. He's very soft spoken. He's very quiet. And if you ever watch his videos, he's acting like a it's hilarious when you know exactly who he is. If you ever met him.
Yeah.
Like I said, people didn't respond to him acting normally, so when he acted like that, people responded and said, "Well, hell, I'm going to act like this and I'm going to take it to 11." Anyways, you know what? I'm just going to do the boilerplate now. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shard.
Just a little warning, we will not be doing a podcast next week because it's Thanksgiving. And I'm just giving everybody a break away from the podcast for a week, so... yeah, you're not going to have a podcast next week, but we should have plenty. Like I said, next in 2 weeks it'll be December, and will it be December? It'll be December 1st, actually. And we will start talking about our favorite games of the year.
Oh, I'm ready.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know that Scott already declared his. TJ already declared his. Favorite game of the year so far, and it deals with night flying birds. Night flying birds and young males.
Yay.
So we will see you in 2 weeks.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.